We are recording.
Hot mic.
Hey, so what did you think about that whole Kendrick Lamar thing? Oh, nah.
Well, it was my barista team that let me in on the Drake-Kendrick Lamar beef, I guess about, I don't know, close to about a year ago. So, yeah. Totally freaking weird, I guess, for Super Bowl beef to be it. You know, obviously, yeah.
Yeah, is that what you got to say about that?
That's about all I got to say. Yeah, it's funny. They're not like us.
Did you notice how he turned to the camera and smiled?
Yeah, whole time he's hiding from the camera except for the part where he's like, "Hey, Drake." So I take it that they're not boys anymore.
Yeah, they're not BFFs. You know, and if you're
hopefully we won't end up that way.
Yeah, hey, if we can do
hey, Spence, if they not like us.
If we can get our Grammys while doing diss tracks of each other, man, I have to do some cause and benefit right there.
We could just maybe start a purposeful like beef and see if that's what blows us up. And also thank Beyonce.
And I hear that, you know,
thank you, Beyonce.
You're getting really good at editing videos and tracks. So, you know, on TikTok at least.
Yeah. So well,
you can set
know.
It off, man. Okay. One last thing on this. Spotify has, you know, playlists that track each song in their beef history. So if you ever just really want to be entertained, listen to the tracks
to
in
the
order
back and forth
over the past couple of years order. That they've been fighting with
this
each other.
This has been going on for a couple of years.
At least.
Well, what started the beef that informed us?
I am not an expert. My best attempt to explain this is that, you know, well, I'm going to say you know, but I don't. You may not know this. Did you know that Drake and Kendrick did some songs together? Like, they used to be buddies.
Well, I thought they were they were boys at one time.
So they were boys.
Did they have a podcast together?
They weren't that good of boys. But they did a couple of songs together. And, you know, Kendrick came out of the gate saying that he's really competitive. Like, he wants to be known as one of the best rappers of all time, right? And so he made some competitive-ish lyrics in one of his songs that Drake was not on. And now he named like several different people about how he was coming for them.
So it wasn't just Drake.
It wasn't just Drake. You know, Drake was probably one of like three or five people that he named on this particular song, saying that he's basically saying, "I'm coming for you. I'm going to take your throne," kind of attitude.
Could be taken as a compliment.
Well, that's exactly what he meant. Like, he meant that, you know, I see y'all at the top of your game. Heads up, I'm coming for you.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And of all the people that was on that list, Drake really was the only one that got really offended by it. And
what
so,
a baby.
Then, yeah. And so then he started pushing back, and it all went downhill from there.
So I guess, you know, what's the pedophile stuff? I mean, wasn't he on Disney or something?
So I think I'm not going to get into this part, but what I will say is that if this stuff is remotely interesting to you, Caleb, there's one song, and you know, this is on tape, so I should probably pause and say, hey, listeners, if you decide to do what I'm about to recommend, heads up, explicit lyrics, okay? But there is a song called Meet the Grams where Kendrick is basically writing a letter, a personal letter, to each one of Drake's family members, including Drake's dad. And then towards the end of the song, he writes a letter to Drake directly. And he makes it abundantly clear what he thinks of Drake and Drake's whole family. So, and then after that, it just kind of went really off the rails.
They're
so,
not so like us.
They're not. They're not like us. There you go. All right. So now that we got that taken care of, did you even watch the Super Bowl?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Wasn't that crazy?
Yeah.
That did not. The scoreboard did not reflect the competitive game that I thought it was going to be.
No.
It was not a competitive
I'm
game.
I'm glad the Chiefs lost.
So you weren't supporting the three-peat dynasty,
made
huh?
Taylor Swift cry.
Oh, no.
I've always been a
Swiftie. Were you bathing
in
the tears?
I've always been a Swiftie, but yeah.
Yeah, I feel like you're going to get us in trouble saying stuff about Taylor Swift, but.
Yeah, she's going to put a witch curse on me or something. But I've always thought she was an amazing talent from the time she came out. She's amazing. But hey, everybody's got to lose every now and then.
That's right. Because they're not like us. So now that we got that formally established, let me tell you what else.
She breaks up with Kelt because he lost.
Now that would be crazy.
That would be great.
Great. You think TMZ would?
I would definitely be back on Tay Tay's team.
TMZ would be on 24-hour shifts.
You're a loser, Kelsey.
Oh Lord, I don't even know how we got on all this. All right. So the purpose, believe it or not, of this episode is not to talk about the Drake and Kendrick Lamar beef. We are picking up. This is actually a part two, where we are picking up from part one of you educating us on direct sales. And what did direct sales and the Drake Kendrick Lamar beef have in common? How about you filled that one?
I have no clue, but maybe it'll sell this podcast.
because we've mentioned
Drake, Kendrick Lamar, and we've thanked Beyonce. Beyonce, yeah. Who won the Grammy for Country Album of the Year.
I kind of feel like we're checking all of the algo check boxes. Yeah.
Well, we got 30% of our listeners in L.A.
This is good.
Not Lower Alabama, Los Angeles.
Oh, man. Oh, okay. So one more thing before we get right to it. Happy Valentine's Day, Caleb.
Happy Valentine's Day.
We are recording on Valentine's, which I don't really know if that's something that we should be proud of. Is that commitment or is that pathetic?
Well, as you heard, my wife came by, so I'm not in the doghouse. We're going out tomorrow because we're smart. We're not going to fight Valentine's traffic on Friday of all days.
And she is not upset with me for taking her Valentine and recording an episode.
Nah, we're good. We're good. Yeah, we had a pretty good sales day, so mama's fairly happy when sales are good. So
just like Taylor Swift.
Yeah, it's you know what? Christy and I's romance is very much just like
really?
Yeah. I mean if you were to do a snack like side by side, yeah.
that's it, huh?
That's it. Yeah. No, it's like the exact opposite of that.
Well, that's good to know, man. I learned something new every time I talk with you, which is really maybe that's the common theme, is that is in the spirit, because I'm trying to learn stuff from you about direct sales. Yeah. So I'm just happy to learn all these other things at the same time.
Yeah, all right. and which is a mystery. It can be a mystery, especially when I'm walking in. Not necessarily prepared, but you're about to hit me with a bunch of questions.
Of course, man. I'm going to pick up where we left off.
To do. And so,
absolutely. And that's fun for both of us.
And we've slept a lot since the first one. I'm trying to remember even what we covered a little bit.
It is kind of cool that we're recording an episode and it's not dark outside, at least not yet. So that's,
it's about to be.
That's nice. Okay, so here's the thing. I'm going to tell you some of the stuff that I remembered, some of the stuff I learned from what you were talking about, mm-hmm. because, you know, it has been a minute since we mm-hmm. did part one. And then I'm going to follow up with some more questions.
Okay.
All right. So I do know some of the things you stressed that if our listeners have not listened to part one, I probably want to hit pause now and go back and listen to part one because the recap really isn't going to make much sense. But when we were talking about direct sales and if you want a refresher on that, listener, direct sales in the context of this episode and part one is defined as like human to human, face to face sales. Okay.
Correct.
And you talked about several things that in your 30 plus years of experience of actually doing direct sales and not talking about it or reading about it, which is why I'm so glad we're having this conversation. You started off by talking about the importance of actually knowing the product cold, because if you don't really know what you're selling, it's going to show in a lack of confidence and the way that you carry yourself during the conversation. So you can't just be told about the widget. You really got to know what you're selling inside and out.
Yeah. I look at it as very much an intimate relationship with your product. And and so at least for me, like I would have a very difficult time with any organization trying to sell something that I just, first of all, didn't believe in. Now, and there's a lot of organizations that try to shove products down the consumers and vice, you know, by proxy through salesman's throat. And that can put you in a pretty interesting position when you're, you know, trying to sell a product. And the fact of the matter is I didn't. I don't sell products that I don't believe in. And then also to try to go and sell something that you just don't know, people are going to see right through that.
You think eventually. Because it carries through to the way you talk about
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that just, I mean, you know, we just had Morgan Spencer on there. And so, like, he talked about how, you know, you're, as a theologian, as a pastor, you know, you're trying to sell Jesus. And I don't know if you've ever met somebody that's trying to sell Jesus and you're just like, you don't really know your product really well. Meaning, like, I don't know that you know Jesus, but based on the way that you're trying to sell them. And so that's why I say, like, there's an intimate thing there. I believe in Jesus. I can sell Jesus because I've got an intimate relationship with Jesus. When it comes to, say, a product or a widget or a thing that you're going to push, promote, and sell, yes, you need to intimately know that thing inside and out. That way you can be able to talk to it, know its vulnerabilities of that widget, but then also highlighting the strengths of why it's good, why it benefits you. And that's the other thing is, at least for me, is being able to sell a widget that's basically helping humanity, helping you be able to do your job better. That's something I can get behind.
Well, plus, you know, you think about not just the lack of confidence in the pitch, but also imagine how disastrous the Q&A is if you really don't know the product well.
Well, because you're going to get hammered with questions. And you know, obviously when you're first starting out, it's better to not just BS. You just kind of say, no, you know, I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah.
There's obviously that. There's going to be learning curves with anything. So it's not to, you know, be intimidated about when you're asked questions about your widget or service or whatever it is that you're trying to sell. You actually take note of those and use those as opportunities to find the answer.
And so that was the first thing that I thought was just good old fashioned horse sense. Like, that's something that our people really need to think about, is if you don't really know the product, just take a moment to get to know the product before you start trying to tell everybody about how it's the best thing in the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, second thing I got from you was you really stressed about the importance of the prospect as a relationship and not just somebody you're trying to close a deal with.
Yeah.
And I think that's also quality advice, because if you're looking at the prospect as just another number, just another metric, I think they're going to see through that nowadays.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you are, you know, a great performer,
mm-hmm.
Relationships, especially quality relationships, seem to be in short supply these days.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was a great advice that you were giving right there on that.
Yeah, and it's getting to be a rare thing because of what technology has done. It's created this separation between, say, a product or a service. You know, I don't know if you, you know, right now, like I'm looking at changing some things within my organization from a technical standpoint. And it's very frustrating because just trying to get a hold of a person and to talk to a person, and to also you're reaching out to organizations where that person's always different. And so that's a major benefit when you can be in front of somebody's face and you've got a product, say, that they're buying today, where there is this separation. Having a personal and building a personal relationship is it's a thing that's beginning to be lost. And so I think there always is going to be a need for human to human interaction and personal relationships.
I think it also is something that the customer can identify very quickly if you're trying to get to know them, like actually know them, versus just trying to get their money.
Yeah.
And so I think it really pays dividends, just like what you were talking about on mm-hmm. part one of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
Third thing that you talked about that I thought was very noteworthy was about how the word of mouth advertising is kind of worth this weight in gold,
mm-hmm.
more so than really any other type of form of advertising. Mm-hmm. So when you're trying to get a foot in for direct sales, if the reason you're getting the foot in is because you got referred in, they're already a warm lead out of the gate. Now, granted, we didn't really talk about cold, warm, hot leads. I think that's one of the things we're going to touch on in part two, but we'll get to that in a second. But the thing is that, man, I thought that was quality advice, Caleb.
Yeah.
That if you can plant, because of focusing on relationships over just taking people's money, if they see that, wow, what this guy, Caleb, was telling me is legit, I'm using the product, everything he said was accurate, I'm a fan, I'm going to tell my friends, you're already set up in such a better position to talk to them.
Yeah, that way you're not actually going in on a cold call. They're right. Approaching you. And of course, obviously, the more that you can replicate, the less you have to do of this difficult thing called cold calling.
Yeah. Now, the one thing that I don't remember you talking much about, and so I wanted to ask you about it and find out if it was just because we ran out of time or if maybe you just have a certain belief about it one way or the other. And it's the idea that, so first off, I should probably say the three things we just mentioned that you were talking about in part one,
mm-hmm.
that's like totally in line with classical marketing from like a business school perspective, because they really harp on those three things. So well done, professor. Like your real world experience is hand in hand with mm-hmm. what they teach in business schools. One of the topics that I didn't hear you bring up, though, and I'm curious, was that of creating a quote-unquote sense of urgency. It's also referred as a resource scarcity.
Okay.
And I was curious if you didn't bring it up just because you don't believe in it, or you didn't bring it up because you ran out of time, or you'd already planned on making that part of part two. Was it important to you when you were doing a lot of direct sales and you were calling on customers to create a sense of urgency and resource scarcity? Or did you find that to be gimmicky? Or for example, can you create a sense of urgency? Can you create resource scarcity if you know your resource isn't scarce? What if you got a million widgets in your warehouse? I mean, it seems kind of hard to be like, act now, we have limited supply, when you know you don't. Or is that unethical? Or, you know, I mean, would you mind just speaking to the whole concept of resource scarcity from through the lens of direct sales?
Okay, so, that's definitely not, I guess, language that I would have spoken about, but that's something that would always bit uncovered early on when you're asking and interacting with questions. So largely because of what I, in the industry that I was at, I was dealing with largely a manufacturing environment. The big thing that I was attempting to find is where that bottleneck's at. So that right there is their resource scarcity. And so when you can find out what that need is that customer needs, is that kind of along the lines of meaning, like, to create this sense of urgency, you really may not know. And that comes from gathering intel and asking those types of questions.
I mean, it certainly can. if you're trying to figure out what their scarcity is, that's a different you know, spin on it than what you would think classically. Because, you know, like, think about it in the context of commercials with the whole act now. The idea of acting now is because something is scarce.
Yeah.
So get it while you can.
Yeah.
Do you subscribe to that approach? Or is it really more of the way that you defined it as it's trying to find what resources are already scarce from their perspective and trying to tap into that instead?
Yeah. So I guess because I was in just this kind of really niche industry, I kind of knew where those bottlenecks and where that sense of urgency from their part was going to be, at least within a general area of direction, because that was the big thing that I focused on. But I see what you're saying. Like, how is it that you can say get there? And that's a really good question. And can you get there? Can you discover what that thing is? Can you discover what that thing is? That, I think that's the,
yeah, I mean, cause
that,
like,
would be the goal.
So let's change gears and look at this from the perspective of your coffee house. Mm-hmm. All right. So do you try to create a sense of urgency whenever you're running a promo? Is the scarcity time? Because I'm assuming the scarcity is not product. Like, you probably have enough vanilla syrup, so you can probably do enough vanilla lattes. You wouldn't be able to truthfully say, hurry up and get a vanilla latte today because I only got 5 left.
Yeah.
You know, so I think people would see right through that, yeah. You know, unless there is some special syrup that's like being discontinued. But outside of that, what type of strategy can you use to get them to act now in the context of direct sales?
Well, so, you know, we just this past week are adding a new thing onto the menu. There's a few different reasons as to why we're doing that. We're trying to get, we've got this average ticket sale price. And so, you know, we need to either have more transactions a day and or increase that ticket price and or both. And so we have a new menu item on, and what we're doing is just asking that question. Would you like to try the new da 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 da? And what that does, at least in their mind, or, you know, if it's a new product that you're going to be doing for, say, we got a new syrup in, which is a French toast. And so then you're, you know, for a limited time only. So the way that you're framing that messaging, at least, that, you know, from the coffee shop, that's kind of what we're trying to do to kind of create this call to action, even though that person may not say, want that. And it's a new frosted apple pie is what it is. It's really good. But so we asked that question. Now, the challenging part is getting your people to buy in to do that.
Well, to agree that something is scarce so that they need to act now.
Correct. Well, and then just like, you need to ask that question. And of course, I've gotten pushback. And it's like, well, you know, if they're not asking, it's like, well, no, what you're doing is you're letting them know that you have apple pie, or, you know, the next time they come through or they say no, thank you, you're not, you know, shoving it on them. You're just asking the question. And so it does this thing psychologically within somebody's mind. And you see this at your chain restaurants all the time. And it may not even necessarily be a product. If you notice, anytime you go to the McDonald's menu, what's the first thing they say through the drive-thru? Are you placing your order through the app today? And it's like, well, no. I mean, well, why is it that they're doing that? Well, they're trying to push you to do the thing through the app.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this is the same thing. I'm just kind of trying to think in my head of I guess strategy of how we're going, how we go to market here at the coffee shop, and I guess the crossover with other places on how they do that.
You know, I heard an interesting,
I don't know if it's necessarily the same thing.
Well, I mean, I think you do one of the examples of that in your seasonal drinks, because the scarcity that's being communicated in that is time.
Correct.
You know, you may have 1,000 cases of pumpkin spice in the back, but there's only so many months that you're going to sell pumpkin spice.
That's right.
You know, and so that creates the act now response. That's the scarcity is time, not necessarily material. Now, the interesting part about it, though, is that this week I was listening to a small business owner that has a car dealership, and he was talking about how he is conveying scarcity in time because of potential tariffs.
Okay.
And he's saying, hey, act now, because I don't know if this truck is going to be the same price pretty soon.
All right.
And so, you know, that is a way to ethically, honestly communicate. If you're thinking about buying a truck, now's the time, because I don't know if this price is going to stay the same pretty soon.
And if it's going to be here because of that, people are buying
it
now.
You know, so that's an interesting example as well. So that's why I wanted to bring it up. I was curious what your thoughts were about that.
Yeah.
Now, something I know for a fact that we ran out of time on was defining the whole cold call, what a cold lead even is versus warm versus a hot. So you mind educating our people on the different temperatures?
Well, I guess so. Obviously, let's just talk about, so like, what is cold call, and then what's the purpose of cold call? The purpose of the cold call is to just do this, initiate contact with potential customers. And the key being you're initiating contact with customers who haven't expressed interest in your product, meaning like you're going in there cold. They haven't called you. They don't know you. They don't know anything about you. And so you're just kind of initiating this contact to talk about this product or service that you're selling.
Now, I noticed you communicated two different cold things at the same time. You're saying they don't know your product, and, oh, by the way, they don't know you either.
They don't know you, and they haven't expressed interest in it. So it is a very important thing in the sales world that you're going to be tasked with having to do, because what is it you're trying to do? You're trying to drum up business. You know, and it's not necessarily too hard. And, you know, so like, do I cold call with, say, the coffee shop? Well, early on I did. You know, I was new in town, and so I'm going and printing menus, and I'm just walking in places, handing out menus, giving my number, hey, we're here, you know. So you're basically just initiating that contact. The challenging part can be, is based upon that product or service of what you're trying to peddle, is finding who that person is within that organization that is a decision maker that can use that therein lies where you know, when I think of the term cold calling, I do not advise ever. I mean, sometimes you're just going and knocking on doors cold. However, in today's world, with the technology that we have, you've got to be able to do some research and do some digging before you're just ever going into a place cold.
So if you're an entrepreneur and the only opportunity you have is to approach someone cold, mm-hmm. What advice do you have?
Do your research. Find out as much information as you possibly can.
Beforehand.
Beforehand. But because those first impressions mean everything. Different organizations are difficult to navigate. So any piece of information that you can get on how to navigate an organization is key. You know, that's why I think, you know, professional group like Rotary clubs and things like that are probably important to be able to be a part of, because that's where, you know, you can make calls, you can talk to other people, see if they've got contacts in there. You know, so, you're gathering intel. To gather as much intel as you possibly can before you step foot in a place, I think, is key.
Fair. Okay, so then what's the difference between cold and warm?
Well, so, you know, I would look at a warm as something that's they've reached out to you, they've expressed interest in your product, and or it's a referral, like what we spoke about earlier. It may very well be an organization that uses a product like yours, but I still say it's not. I would still say something like that is cold, because they don't know you. They haven't expressed any interest. And so warm would be something that, you know, they've expressed interest in your product and or you, and there's some kind of referral basis. That's the way I would differentiate those two.
So now warm's different in the context of the direction of the communication, because a lot of places consider warm as they're contacting you.
Correct.
Y'all don't know each other, but they're contacting you.
Correct.
How did you navigate that when they're contacting? Because I mean, you didn't know that they were going to call you today, so it's not like you had any time to research them. So
yeah. Well, I mean, obviously, when someone's reaching out to you, you're taking that information and you're going directly to that source. And then, you know, you've at least got this difficult part out of this is a person that's reaching out to you now, still in lies. You still have a discovery process to go through, you know, what is it? You just start asking the questions, you know, what is it you called us for? What is it that interested you? Find out what is it that they know? Cause obviously they've done some research on their end for there to be interest in your product and or widget. And so, the more information you get, the more that you can, tailor each one of those calls to find out what it is that they need.
Did you find it beneficial to let them set the tempo whenever they already had a clue of what it is they want? Or in some cases, it's not a clue. They may know exactly what they want. Because, I mean, at that point, are you just fact-checking to make sure that they know which make and model that they want and that they're correct in their assumptions?
Yeah, that's definitely a rookie mistake that I've made many times is not – it's trying to set the tempo rather than letting them kind of set that tempo. Yeah, very much so. Yeah, I think that would be wise behavior in the sales world, especially on a warm lead where they're reaching out to you, where they're warm, they're ready to, you know, to do in this discovery process. So, you know, they're going to be more apt to be able to listen to what you have to say. In regards to that, but it's, you know, it's still the same thing, asking questions, listening to them, find out what it is that they're at least in their head, what their needs are.
Okay. Then in that case, how did you handle a hot lead? Because in my world, we always defined a hot lead as they're just ready to give you money.
Yeah.
They're like, here, take my money, sign right. Yeah. So how did you navigate that? Because the tempo is different whether you want it to be or not in that situation.
Yeah. I think, you never want to necessarily fire business, but sometimes you have to cool that thing down, especially when they have a misunderstanding, say on your product and or service, and maybe that's why they're hot. So if you're still not asking those types of questions to qualify being a hot lead, because I tell you, if they've got some unrealistic expectations or misunderstood something, and that's the reason that they're hot, you need to cool that thing down really.
Man,
really
I'm so
quick.
Glad you're bringing that up, because that's what I have seen happen. That the reason
all,
why
that happens all the time.
The reason why they were so hot and ready to cut a check is because they completely misunderstood what the offering was.
That happens all the time.
And imagine what happens if you take that check and you don't validate that information.
It's going to come back on you. And it's going to be very costly. So I've never been in a world where it's also just kind of a one-time sale. And I've never had to necessarily navigate that, meaning like anytime I've done business, there's always this expectation that there's going to be this ongoing type of relationship, which is what I would want. It is a little bit different when you're, maybe it's just, there's just this one time interaction. But that can be really dangerous. When there is not this service type relationship after a sale too.
So then let's split hairs on this one, because I've seen about, I would say predominantly three different types of hot leads, and they've all had very different outcomes. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious at your thoughts on each one. The first type of hot lead I've seen is because they just grossly misunderstood something. Mm-hmm. And so that's why they're getting you to hurry up and take their money, because they want to lock in that deal before they think the ground shifts up under them.
Right.
You know? And if you don't take the time to slow down that tempo and go, whoa, 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 Did you know that for your price, you're only buying one? You're not buying three.
Right.
You were misinformed. Da, 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 da. If you don't slow that tempo down, I love the phrase you used earlier, cost. I totally agree. I think it comes back as a huge cost to you, either financially or reputationally, if you don't slow that tempo down and find out, are we even on the same page?
Right.
So that's the first type of hot lead I've seen.
So it's really good. It's like, why are you so hot?
Right.
And you just let them talk.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't just take the money because something's going on and you need to understand that. So I think that's great advice. The second type of hot lead I've seen is that the referral source, they trust so much that it's just like a done deal to them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like if their mom says, go buy this from Caleb, here's how much it costs. And the mom may have given them all correct information, but they trust their mom so much. Like, yeah, of course, here, you know. Yeah. What's your advice when it's just an extremely trusted referral source?
Still validate. And what you're doing is you're just instilling that this would be the reason maybe that there is this trust there. So if there is a trusting relationship, say on another end, and that's how you got that referral, you still validate. Because there's, you know, it's secondhand information.
Right.
And so it could have just, you know, not nothing sinister going on. There could be something misunderstood in that interaction. And when you start, you know, talking to this other person about that thing, you still need to validate.
When things get lost in translation.
Is the thing that it's an ethical thing. Is the product or service that you're selling going to benefit the other organization? Obviously, it's going to benefit you, maybe, if you sell something. But if you're pushing something that somebody doesn't need and or it hurts or harms them, man, it's just flat out wrong.
Yeah. I mean, things can get lost in translation innocently all the time.
Oh, all the time. Which is why you always have things on paper and there's agreements because of that. Things fall apart and you always gotta validate.
So let me tell you about that third hot lead. The third hot lead is just that loyal customer that you've been doing business with for years. They already know the terms. They already know the product. They know the expectations. Da, da, da. Here's where I think people make mistakes on this type of hot lead. They begin to take them for granted.
Yeah.
And I think that's a huge mistake because the thing that made them a hot lead in the first place was the relationship.
Yeah.
And they saw that you meant what you said. You said what you meant. They got your product. It met expectations. The price was fair. And you've earned that trust now.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the moment you take that trust for granted, you lose them potentially as a hot lead. Agree or disagree?
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I would say, obviously, if there is some type of trust on that level of relationship, I would say, first of all, it's a human character flaw of, you know, maybe taking relationship for granted. And it's really, I would say, where I'd made those types of mistakes in the past of maybe taking something for granted of not, you know, maybe being lazy and not there. And again, you still validate, you still need to validate and make sure, because they're that trusted source. And so, you know, if we're getting lazy within that, whatever that sales cycle is, you know, everything's had a sales cycle, meaning certain steps that you go through to validate, but, you know, before the actual business deal and POs cut. And yeah, I've made those mistakes before, and people buying and purchasing on the other end because of that, you're trusting this other source. And, I think that probably does happen more often than not. But that's why we always got to be aware that if people are human, people make mistakes, but a bad mistake can definitely cost you in the long run. So it's just a matter of being professional and, doing due diligence the the whole way through.
And continuing to remind that customer that their relationship matters.
Yeah, very much so.
So thank you for taking the time to talk about customer temps. I know we didn't get a chance to talk about the first time. So those were the things that I wanted to follow up with you on. What are the things that you want to bring up that we didn't just have enough time for in part one?
Oh, wow. I'm still trying to, you know, in my head go back. There's so many things. One of the areas that I was coming from, you know, from an entrepreneur standpoint of is, you know, you're trying to say build this company of yours and you're going to be doing it by direct sales. And if it's something that you're going to do or you're going to be able to hire out to do. And obviously, I think the big things that we hit on is entrepreneurs need to be able to do this, even if they're not necessarily good at it, because they also, if you're planning on hiring, you know, people to do that, you need to know, first of all, how difficult and challenging it is.
So you're talking about hiring the direct sellers?
Well, meaning like if you're hiring the direct sales, it's going to be very important for you to get out there and do some of it yourself. That way you can at least have some empathy of, first of all, how challenging and hard it is. I think we talked about, you know, definitely the mental health toll that it can have. And obviously, too, this is why qualifying leads and doing due diligence and building relationships matter. But because what happens is when you do make mistakes or mistakes are made, it's going to take a mental health toll on you. And that obviously makes it very challenging confidence wise to be able to go out and, you know, replicate and do more. So you want to mitigate those types of mistakes. And I think, you know, as you get more seasoned, you'll get better at that.
What do you think the future of direct sales is going to look like?
Drug sales.
No, the future of direct sales.
Direct sales. I thought you said drug sales. I'm like, wow, that's a heavily regulated industry.
What do you think the future of direct sales,
legal or illegal drugs,
is going to look like, Caleb? I mean, considering everything that's going on, AI and all the above. Yeah,
I mean, it's going to be changing. However, I also, you know, I'm just kind of thinking about where I'm at in my career and what I'm seeing. I was like, well, you know, there's a lot of opportunity out there for direct sales because there's getting to be less and less organizations are cutting sales forces left and right. We're kind of, I guess, seeing that because of automation and AI and all of these types of things. And so there's less and less investment, say, in human capital. So I don't know, maybe what that does is it creates an opportunity for somebody to, you know, kind of be building direct sales organizations, which is, you know, I've had a few different ideas and talks with people out of several different industries, because human capital is always going to end up being something that we just can't move away from. It may look different and there's going to be less and less of it. However, I think there, we could maybe be seeing an opportunity for, you know, if you're a salesperson out there, you know, keep your eyes open. If you're getting phased out of your job, it doesn't necessarily mean it's the end of the world. It could be the Lord opening up your eyes to, say, another opportunity.
Because you think there's always going to be a place for that in some industry somewhere.
I think, yeah, absolutely. Especially even in the tech world. I'm actually visiting with some guys right now. They're tech guys, but they make some great products. But they're going to need somebody to get out there and push their product and their widget. There's no better way to do that than to be able to be face to face, you know, with other people.
And I'm reminded of something you said in the part one episode where direct sales can also be one to many. And so if you're on a stage, you know, or if you're in a presentation or a pitch, man, Those human skills are super important.
Or you got a podcast.
Yeah. we're talking to humans right now. Good.
Yeah. 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 So, I don't know what the future holds with it, but I think we may see that there's going to be a lot of opportunity for maybe independent direct sales organizations that can collaborate and team with other companies.
Really?
Possibly.
That'd be interesting.
You know, if organizations are wanting, you know, there's, I can only assume there's a myriad of reasons as to why corporations, organizations are moving away or changing their sales strategy because of technology. And obviously there's a lot of risk with human capital and hiring a lot of people. And so, you know, that could be another reason why there's more headcount reductions today from Salesforce organizations. However, I still think that there's a need there. They're going to have to, organizations are going to have to figure out a way to build relationships with customers, from a one-on-one human-to-human contact, because there's becoming less of it. I think maybe we may be seeing an opportunity that's going to, at least in the West.
I saw a flavor of that already. Okay. I had a client that wanted to do some large scale trade shows.
Uh-huh.
And so some of these things are massive. Like some of the trade shows you'll see out in Vegas, you know, tens of thousands of people show up for them. It can be weekend event.
Organization, that's their full business go to market model.
Right. Right. And something that kind of I thought was interesting was that on one of these large shows, they decided to do their direct sales with quote unquote talent. And at first I didn't know what they meant.
Yeah,
I said, well, you say that you want to hire talent for this one particular trade show because it was so huge. And I said, okay. It's like, you know, no problem. I said, but I need to play a little bit of ignorance. Like, what do you mean hire talent? Like, you already got really good
like
engineers.
A comedian or a singer?
And so it turns out they were talking about models.
Oh.
And so they.
Talent, that kind of talent.
So they.
Well,
they,
I know. I'm familiar with that language.
To a talent agency, and it just turns out that every member of that agency was like a 10 out of 10.
Does sex still sell today?
Apparently so, and quite well. And so.
Well, maybe I need to become a plus size model.
Now, I need to play fair here. They were not, you know, scantily clad or anything, but I mean, yeah, they were very attractive people. And
yeah, that's the drug industry that I'm familiar with.
And what do you know? We had a lot of people at the booth. Funny how that works. But it was really interesting to me because while these people certainly could attract a crowd, they didn't know anything about the product. And so the seasoned talent would come to you and go, hey, like, what are the bullet points? What do I need to know? Because I'm going to be turning them over to you very quickly. And I was like, okay, now that's smart. But like the rookie talent, they would just stand there and be pretty. they didn't really know.
You get dumber when the blood rushes into a different area of the body. I'm sorry, we'll probably have to edit that out. But
so it was
maybe you can get by with that.
It was very fascinating because I mean that was textbook direct sales, but in a very weird way.
Yeah.
I felt like we were selling more than just the widget.
Well, yeah, there's coffee shops that are doing that. You go out in West Texas, coffee shops with talent working inside the but I want to stay married and not be sued for sexual harassment, so we will not be employing that
so
strategy.
There's different strategies.
Miss Christie is not going
she's
to.
She's not a fan of that strategy?
No.
Now, but have you asked her, though?
No, they're not going to have that conversation at all.
You don't want to just send her a copy of this episode and be like, hey, weigh in on this one, Christy. What do you think?
Well, I mean, she might say a bunch of beefy men because, you know, 90% of your clientele is females.
Wah, wah. Wah, wah. That did not quite go the way Caleb thought. Oh, but you know, hey, actually,
yeah, there could be a place for this beefcake, beefcake coffee shop.
If you're, I'm gonna take you at your word. 90%. Okay, so you said 90% of your customers.
Yeah,
are women.
I'm not gonna say 90. So I'm gonna say probably closer to about 70 to 75% of my clientele is female. Wow. Now, part of my focus is to start getting this older male demographic. I think that there's a lot of potential there with an older male demographic that are not, you know, drinking lattes.
Yeah. Right. They may not even know what they are.
Well, they don't know what they are. And so
I love that episode we had with Jason Gladwell. He was I'd be open to it. I just don't know what it is. And I think there's a lot of people that are in that category.
Well, I mean, you know, there's a language barrier. It's an education thing. And so when we looked at even, you know, with building our menu and how we're going to market, and specifically in rural markets, I think there's an opportunity there to, and we have seen that. I think that we've been successful in Columbia, Mississippi on changing that demographic. And it's not like I'm not focusing on women, but they're already kind of in the game anyway. Mm. And women do a better job of kind of educating one another anyway.
Yeah.
Men don't. We're more isolated.
We're just not as sociable, you know.
Correct.
On average.
Yeah, in a different way. And so we've got to learn differently. And that's why you'll see me in the TikToks doing that, because they need to see a big, beefy, manly man drinking a latte.
All right, so I've got to press you on this, because I think this is really interesting.
Oh, man.
All right, so, okay, I'm going to take you at your word, 75% mm-hmm. of your current customer mix is female. Mm-hmm. All right. So let's play that out. Okay. Let's say that you were experimenting with different direct sales strategies and you mm-hmm. decided to hire some talent. Now the normal, you know, quote unquote, talent worker for contract direct sales is female aged, we'll say like 18 to maybe 27, somewhere up in there. Okay. At least from that agency that we worked with out in Vegas. If you were to do that, if you were to hire female talent, come in, no. How do you think your existing customer demographic would respond?
Well, I mean, yeah, it's not a strategy I'll ever employ.
Okay.
But meaning like I'm looking to, like, if you have to be smart, number one, but most importantly, you have to be kind. You have to have a heart for serving other people, period. What you look like, what your sex is, all of that stuff. I mean, at the end of the day, it may work. I'm sure I could, like I said, I get divorced. And then what does your existing clientele like? Look at this person and what he represents. And people aren't stupid.
It may not be consistent with the message, huh?
Yeah, but no, it's not a strategy that I would ever employ. Now, I mean we've got some beautiful girls that work for us. We've got some beautiful guys that work for us.
I was about to say, I mean, our listeners would be going, well, hey, if your demographic is 70-75% female, then would you be open to getting like a totally jacked guy that looks like a Greek god? And do you think that would help your direct sales?
Yeah. Man, no.
You don't think so, huh?
No, I will hire men. Okay. But then again, too, you know, we're not going to be... I'm gonna be dressing them up in bathing suits. Now, I may put them in a mule costume.
Oh, there you go. It's gonna be kind of hard to show off their features in that thing, but
well, the mule has muscles bulging out, and so yeah. No, we're not gonna be doing that. If the person, male and or female, happens to have a beautiful disposition and muscles, then praise the Lord. But that is not the focus. It does matter. It does matter. They have to have a heart for serving other people.
Yeah.
And meaning kindness. Now, There's a lot of people that are really kind and they're just dumb. They can't work here either. I mean, you got to be smart.
Yeah.
We just don't hire dumb people.
That would make a great sign on your front door.
No, we don't. And I think that we've got a good reputation. You know, a year and a half in this market, and I get complimented all the time on our team. I'm very proud of our team and just the way that they treat other people. That's key. That's going to be the most important thing.
But I got to say, man, that's consistent with what you said on both of these direct sales episodes, because if you're going to say that the relationship matters, appearance is not going to go so far.
Yeah.
You know?
It's not going to work in this community, number one. And, that'll never be a part of my model. I'm sorry.
All right. So before we wrap up, any other advice to people trying to either participate in direct sales or hire folks doing direct sales?
Get your feet wet. Get out and do it. You're gonna have to do this thing. If you're an entrepreneur, you've got to be able to get out there and be able to talk about your product or service. Nobody knows, and this is another thing about, like, I'm learning this, like, within my dissertation. There's a lot of people, maybe they're just not sociable, and you know, maybe they get nervous or anxious when they're talking to other people. The thing is when you've got passion for the thing that you do, it makes it a little bit easier to talk about. And so, you know, we started off this this episode talking about, you know, intimately knowing your product. And so if you're really, really good at knowing your product or service, it's going to make it a little bit easier to be able to talk about. And so, you know, it's all about, a mindset. The difficult part is going out and knocking on the door. It's a little bit easier to do the research. But we've all got to learn to communicate better as human beings, especially in this day and age when it's happening less and less. I know Zoom calls and things like that are a thing, and yes, they definitely can help you be more efficient, but we've got to learn to be able to interact person to person and face to face. And the big thing is getting out there to being able to do it. I think another, I guess, important thing that we haven't spoke about is role play.
Beow, chicken, beow, beow.
Yeah, not the brown chicken brown count.
Oh, okay, my bad.
Wearing a cop suit, or a firefighter suit. Meaning, like, you know, to just go through these cold call scenarios with, you know, your significant other or somebody within your organization or a friend, that can definitely help. Help you get in some practice, getting out and speaking to other people. But if you know your product well, that's going to be, I would say, the largest obstacle that people have. So if no one's going to know your product better than you, and the thing that you're passionate about doing and selling, you know, if you've got that down, start knocking on some doors.
And is it safe to say that when you're talking about knowing your product, it's not just like knowing the technical specs, it's knowing how it can help that person?
Yes.
And that's because if you can connect those dots, then
very much so.
Because, I mean, I think engineers have a tendency to just like vomit specifications a lot. I've
noticed
that.
Features and benefits. And
not even recognize that the customer only needs like 1% of those things.
Right.
You know, but if you can figure out how to tailor that information to what that other person needs, man, yeah, you're so much further down the road.
That's right. That's right. And then I would say, you know, learning to speak other people's language is going to be something that happens with practice. So, you know, if you're, say, if you are an outgoing extroverted type of person, you need to learn to speak the language of maybe introverts, engineers, things like that. And then the only way to do that is, hey, you know, ask other engineers. It's a trade. It's a craft. It's something that you have to practice. No, I think we covered this in the first one. There are no natural born salesmen. And so you got to practice it.
And listeners, if you got any tips, man, feedback at sippypodcast.com. Let us know what you think.
Yeah. All right. Let us pray. Dearly Father, we just thank you for another day. We thank you for the listeners that are out there, those that that are tuning in every week, and we just want them to know that we think and pray about them daily. Lord, we just ask you to continue to show us, Chris and I both, on where we're like, where we can be better. Show us the opportunities that and give us the topics that we need to be able to strike a nerve and hit the nerve with our listeners. Lord, we thank you so much for loving us. Teach us to love you better. In your holy name, Jesus, we pray. Amen.
Are you intrigued by today's discussion? Want to hear some more? Great. Stay tuned because you can listen to any episode of the Sippy Podcast with Chris and Caleb by going to sippypodcast.com. That's sippipodcast.com. Or maybe you'd like to give us some feedback or share some thoughts that piqued your interest during our discussion. If so, that's even better. Send us an email to feedback@sippypodcast.com. Thanks again for tuning in and have a blessed day.